Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Grump Up the Volume, a podcast name we've just decided on in the last 5 minutes.
But we are grumpy.
Which is what this is about. So I'm Jamie.
I'm Bushy.
And we're going to rip the piss out of terrible musical developments over the years.
What happens when good bands go wrong?
After years of
basically doing this in coffee shops.
Yeah, we've decided other people should hear it as well. Well, I mean, they shouldn't, but they're going to, so fuck them. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about our years as underground musicmen.
Musicmen.
And the points in our record collections where things get, as Sam McPhears would say, a bit fruity.
Yeah, terrible.
And today we will talk about the point where hardcore bands went hair metal. Or variants thereof.
Yeah, basically what happened when your favourite hardcore band learned how to play four chords in a row.
Yeah.
And then decided they were AC/DC. But they weren't AC/DC.
AC/DC with horrendous results.
More like ABC.
AB, I think a lot of them. So yeah, you know, I was thinking about this, Bushy. And the sad thing about it is with a lot of these bands, these were the first records I heard by them. Because they were the only ones you could get, like, here, really.
That's true. So I'll get into that later when we're talking about Discharge.
Discharge.
That's how we would have ended up with that sort of stuff. Definitely. They were the album that the distributor ordered and then couldn't fucking sell.
Yeah.
So they were a pound in Borderline.
And would occasionally show up in secondhand shops and more.
Which is why, like, the first, even to go off topic for a second, the first Celtic...
We haven't even got to a fucking topic
the,
yet,
the first Celtic Frost album I would have heard would have been the shit one because it was Lake. The cheap one.
Ah, well, I mean, that's so cheap on so many levels that, yeah.
Like, you can see the drummer's pubes, for fuck's sake. Oh, I don't need to see the drummer's pubes.
Oh, the nightmares. So we have assembled a map, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
A map of shitty music lands. And our first stop is Boston in the United States.
Boston!
Home of straight edge, home of... Irish people who aren't Irish.
Home of saying car instead of car.
Home of a hilarious accent. SSD really are the
they're the main.
We have to start with SSD.
If you were to kind of pull this all down to one American band on the East Coast, it would have to be SSD. Because they were kind of the big Boston band. So I get the feeling when they changed, the smaller bands came in after them, you know, because they thought... So if Alan Springer say this is good.
So for people who don't know what the fuck we're talking about, first of all, you're the Edgeman of the pair of us.
The Edgeman.
I'm just going to pronounce him as Man. No.
Well, SSD were like... SSD
well,
were
do you want to just very quickly explain straight edge hardcore in like one sentence for anybody who doesn't know what it is?
Early 80s American hardcore, people who didn't drink or smoke or take drugs.
That'll do.
And SSD were like... The militant. Most militant hard. They were kind of responsible for that, like, say, Youth of Today and all these bands who weren't that tuneful, but would punch you for drinking.
Tunefulness.
They weren't tunesmiths.
Of course,
as was proved later with their hair metal.
Oh my God, they really weren't. Well, they attempted some tune smithery. They fell at the first hurdle and hit themselves in the balls with it quite badly. So SSD put out a couple of pretty classic hardcore records. They put out The Kids Will Have Their Say. They put out Break It Up, which is the one that I really like.
Yeah.
Which, sidebar, I feel is the origin of the voice of, as I've explained to you before, my firm belief that the voice of... Barney Gumble from The Simpsons is based on Springer's performance.
Yeah.
Particularly of the when SSD covered No Reply. I'll probably stick a little clip of this in. His voice, Springer from SSD's voice on their version of the Buzzcocks No Reply on that record is the genesis of Barney Gumble. It's No Reply! No Reply!
It's fair to say that as a guy who couldn't sing hardcore, he certainly couldn't sing real songs.
No, he could not. Now, this stood him in an interesting stead, because when he attempted to... I mean, he certainly progressed in the way that occasionally, we'll say, food poisoning progresses into diarrhea. So we were just talking about... Before we break down records here, we've established that the two key components with these bands where things went off the rails were, first of all, in the vocal department.
Yeah, the singers couldn't sing.
And secondly, in the guitar department.
They couldn't shred. They weren't fucking
there was a
metal
lot of,
guys.
A lot of whittling that went nowhere. It was like listening to a spider run up and down the...
Yeah. And that's another point, though. A spider running up a pair shoelaces. That's another
electrify the shoe spider laces, my friend.
We were talking about this. The band that we think probably influenced a lot of this stuff was Black Flag.
Yeah,
who were also weren't super musicians, but Black Flag remained steadfastly Black Flag. Yeah. It remained interesting and good. And
I'm afraid I'll have to stop you there. What happened to Black Flag in my book? I have a very different view of Black Flag, because obviously there's a point in Black Flag where I just think they're amazing. Then things like In My Head started to happen, where they got a bit dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and it's all a bit pub rock.
See, I like In My
Head. Then they went off on these weird jazz tangents, so they kind of got away with it. Mm. And they had Henry Rollins pretending to be some sort of wild poet man from the woods.
Oh, the crazy girl!
Man!
Yeah.
Which I love. I love those albums.
We all did. And still do. So, SSD.
Yes.
There were two records. There was Howie Rock was their kind of segue into the hair metal. Hilariously hair metal, because none of them had any hair as far as I remember.
Exactly.
Until the end. Now, you were telling me Albarille from SSD had some mighty words for Ian McKay.
Yes.
Which sums up their downfall.
Apparently, Ian McKay is quoted saying that at one point Albarille said to him,
"This would be TV's Ian McKay from every documentary."
Documentarist. But he basically said to him, "If you really cared about the kids, Ian, you'd throw pictures of yourself with your name on them into the audience like Cheap Trick, too."
I would love to think that Ian McKay only didn't do that because he was concerned about hitting somebody with a particularly sharp edge of a printed
I think at that point Ian McKay would have fought you. It was a bit later, wasn't it? They kind of got nice, those
DC. So SSD, their first stumbling block was Howie Rock? It was Howie Rock, which was an EP, six song. Now, they went from Break It Up was kind of a straightforward hardcore record. Howie Rock is kind of an in-between one. Mm. It still has fairly solid elements. I mean, the other one did as well, but it still had the punk rock. But they introduced...
still a hard album.
It got a bit wanky.
Yeah. And it got groove.
It got groove.
See, SSD never had, they were grooveless.
Any type of, let's call it extreme music over the years, when groove came to town.
That's a whole other show.
That was the end of it. So, we'll kind of glaze over Heavy Rock, because really, their little piece of resistance is Break It Up.
Break It Up.
Let's start with the cover of Break It Up. Cover I've just described to you is like an outtake from Tron.
I think it looks like... And
let's look at it again.
It's like the Hindenburg or something. It's like an airship after crashing through a skyscraper, like some sort of 1920s 9/11. I don't really know what it is. Jamie figures it's a wrecking ball.
I think my firm belief
is it a wreck? Yeah, I think it is a wrecking ball.
But I feel like looking at this.
It looks like a fishing weight.
It looks, to be honest with you, looking at it again, I think it's a wrecking ball made from the stuffed carcass of a dead whale.
It looks like a sky shark eating its way.
Maybe this is the real legacy of SSD. Is the Sharknado films were inspired by the front of this album.
And not only is the sky shark has lightning.
Yeah. Now let's also look at the lettering. I'd never really thought about this before. We have two indicators that SSD have announced. Hello, we are now in Metal Town, right? Number one is the SSD logo is in gold.
And it's airbrushed.
Which
is the key to 80s.
And number two, the full "We have arrived, lads."
Yeah.
"The metal is here" is the Break It Up bit of the cover is written in, it looks like it's written in stone.
It's written a la
a Metallica 12-inch that you would have bought because you didn't realise that you had all the songs on the back of the day.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't say Break It Up. It says, Break It Up!
Give It Up would have been a better.
Stop.
Just fuck off.
Stop, Albarille.
So on a musical level, there's so many things to dislike about this album, all of which can be summed up in the song I'm going to play a bit of, which is Children Will Rock.
They will.
Children Will Rock.
Children Will Rock.
It begins with a kind of...
Like a
bit of pub rock and status quo almost. Tonight We're Gonna Rock It, Spinal Tap. Actually, a lot of this album sounds like Tonight We're Gonna Rock It with Spinal Tap.
And a lot of Spinal Tap sounds like actual hair metal bands.
There you go. But this is just wrong on so many levels.
Yeah, it's...
From the title. I mean, what does that mean?
Just break it up, man. It.
No, but like, children will rock.
It's like, children will be rebellious, you know? It sounds like...
though. They will rock, apparently. Now, do we mean backwards and forwards? in a state of catatonic horror.
Maybe it's still the straight edge thing.
As a result of hearing the horrendous USST record.
Or I don't know.
Children Will Rock is in like, you know, those kids, dead rock.
All you need to know is that it's a special type of fucking special garbage. It's fucking shit.
Let's look at the track listing, because there's also, tellingly, for me, I love this, there's a song on this called Hit the Bottom.
Hit the Bottom!
Which is a thing that clearly they had done at this point.
And you see...
Feel the Flame, Blood Flood. What's a blood flood?
It's just there's too much blood.
If I were being ungentlemanly, I'd suggest, is that a song about lady business that happens once a month? I don't know. Is it to do with...
You got your blood flood, baby!
Blood flood, woman! The song doesn't actually sound like that, I don't think.
No.
Maybe it does. Or is it like, you know, you have a blood flood because Albarilla's just thrown a cheap trick for you and hit you in the nose?
Albarilla's just beat you up because he's a fucking jock.
But yeah, Children Will Rock is the song that I'm going to use as an example for this, because it's just awful.
Before we hear that, the point to remember is, as we said earlier, as hardcore bands, these guys could get away with fucking screaming and playing kind of ham-fistedly. But once they stepped into this, you will really hear how Springer could not fucking sing.
Yeah.
He cannot sing.
He really can't. Again, I would say he progressed, and again, I'll use the Simpsons allegory, if he was Barney Gumble.
Yes.
On
the kids will have their say, let's say.
Yeah. He had moved on to being that bit where Homer's at rock camp and goes, baby, baby, baby!
And as well, as a side note for added lols, go and look up the video of their last show if you can find it. It's amazing. You know, I think he's got like a fake tail on and a little British policeman's hat. And he's literally prancing around the stage. Alberell looks like he'd still fight you for looking at him crooked, and their singer's just like doing a little prance.
Sound quality obviously won't matter here because it's more as a visual reference. But we can confirm now, looking at it, I'm going to skip forward a bit, that at this point,
oh my God,
Springer is dressed like Paul Weller in the Stoll Council by way of Barney the Dinosaur. He does indeed have what appears to be a fake tail.
Yes, he does, and he's got a fucking perm.
And is that shoulder pads, or has he got a cardigan thrown over his...
I don't know. I think he wearing the like American football.
He looks like an undead Roger Zaltry.
He looks like when Raven tried to be a fucking successful hair metal band.
I have more respect for Raven than I do for SSD, but anyway. So yes, SSD screams of the night / in the night, screams throughout the night. He
screams on the night.
Nightly screaming.
Yeah, I scream. Night.
I suffer from sleep paralysis, and I had an episode of it in the early hours of this morning, and I kind of more mutter in the night when that happens to me.
Groan in the night.
Groan for help. So nobody's there, and you're just like... Ugh. So I don't know what this song's about. I'm guessing it's either about riding, or it's about... but it would be two cats going at it. Because you know the noise that cats make when they have sex? It's a terrifying sound.
Just the barbed penis.
It's that, or it's... I feel like... I haven't seen the lyrics for this song, but I reckon it might be they were doing a Let's Write a Song About Nightmare on Elm Street. Because it's our metal album, so we have to write a song about it.
Exactly. And you must remember that in the 80s, every big major horror film had the hair metal song to go with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like fucking Cack from Dockin.
Cack and Dockin.
Cack and Dockin.
There's actually... again, there's a lot of tangents going to be in this. But there's a great book called Heavy Metal Movies.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? It's about the use of heavy metal in the
movie. Sure, there was a whole bunch of movies in the 80s.
But there is a lot of hair metal if you go through it. Do you know, moving swiftly on to our next offenders.
Dice.
Do you know the other thing?
Diz.
The other thing that metal bands did, or punk bands did, badly in the 80s. Wrong with songs about horror films. Sorry. I've got a hair coming too. Is ballads.
Yeah.
And nobody did a ballad like quite like DYS on their I see, okay, so DOIS were so confused at this point that no one really is entirely sure what this album is even fucking called.
I think...
It's either just called DOIS or it's called Fire and Ice. But I can't get a definitive answer on either one.
I think DOIS were just going, what would SSD do at this point? They were basically, even down to having the three initial name. I think they were just like the little brother SSD band. And they were just going, we're all metal bands now, father. You know, I think it was one of those situations.
DOIS, again, for people who aren't familiar with them, went from releasing the Wolfpack album, chorus, thusly, Wolfpack, don't give us any shit. Wolfpack, you're going to get hit. Clearly, men who meant terrible business.
Boston! Boston!
You're going to get hit! Was DOIS...
the Department of Youth Services.
Was that the first man of Clown Prince of Hardcore, David Smalley? A man who's lent his negligible vocal skills to a number of records I really like.
Yeah.
And also a man who famously announced when one of his bands, I think it was Down With All, played in Dublin many years ago, this song is for Philip Lynott.
God, old Philip Lynott.
Philip Lynott.
I like him. He was that lad in that Twain Loisey band, wasn't he?
In Dublin.
Yeah, he's a fucking, you know.
Philip Lynott.
Philip Lynott.
To a room full of people.
Did he go, ah...
This who know who Phil Lynott is?
It's for Philip Lynott.
Yeah, Philip Lynott.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think the problem with DYS is...
you say that like it's just worn, man.
Is if you can get over the fucking... The pounding we've just given SSD, DYS are fucking worse. DYS make SSD's fucking last album sound like the fucking Minor Threat discography.
There we go. Episode one, first coffee spray ever. I have soiled my breeks.
Well, at that point,
hot steaming coffee.
Let's listen to DYS
To DYS. A darker current, as invisible and intangible as she. Yet closer still, yet closer still to me. So now that I've cleaned my coffee-strewn flat.
And you've heard DYS.
You've heard. You will have heard Closer Still by DYS. And what a song.
What are they closer to, James?
I think David Smalley is closer to being the
Bon
world's
Jovi.
Worst Paul Di'Anno impersonator. You've heard his soulful, squeaky crooning. You've probably laughed at it just as much as we have. Yeah. That song really, I mean... It
gave me the feels.
No, it didn't. I don't have any feelings, so I'm grand. Okay. Here's the thing with DYS, and here's the thing with a lot of these bands. Some of the stuff, we made like a sort of a checklist of albums that we thought were maybe stinkers.
Yeah.
And we went through them, and we spent a week listening to some of the worst music ever recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it has held up pretty well.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later on in the podcast. Some of it is a lot more... Like, I had forgotten... I just tend to remember the bad bits. Like, with this record, all I can remember is... All anybody can fucking remember is Closer Still. A lot of what DYS did on this album is still kind of upbeat and vaguely... You can tell they used to be a hardcore band. This is my point about the vocals changing, was Dave Smalley's vocals just on this album.
Yeah,
it's fucking terrible. And that's really... That and the solos and stuff. But... My understanding of what DYS were doing here is they kept the fast bits, but rather than... They decided basically they were going to be a thrash metal band, I think is what they were trying to do here. They weren't going the full hair metal in the same way that... Or, you know, the sort of pub rock, really, that SSD and some of these bands did. Ironically, for a bunch of non-drinkers. But DYS were very clearly, I think, trying to get onto the metal bandwagon. Mm. But they... If you look at some of the other bands of the period who did that successfully... some of the best thrash metal records, or thrash associate record, I think Dealing With It by DRI is a masterpiece.
Or even like Thrash Zone, man. I could still listen to that thing
absolutely.
All day.
But like, those are kind of right on the perfect borderline between being kind of inventive and short and funny, not funny, but like, you know,
yeah.
Kind of upbeat in the way that punk was, but with the speed and intensity of metal. Very few bands really were able to pull this off, and DYS absolutely fucking made a badger's arse.
Yeah, they were not. It's safe to say they weren't Metallica.
They were.
Or Anthrax. Or even Cryptic Slaughter. You know, they weren't any of those.
They were. Let's get really obscure and in jokey here. They weren't barely even a Warrant.
No.
Of the Vampire fame. This is the
German. I love that. I could do a whole program about that.
Well, then we need to do a obscure thrash album.
The Vampire's Daughter.
Vampire!
I got that album when I was about 12.
Yeah.
And it's. At some point, I've sold all my metal albums.
It's more interesting to do. And
I kept that fucking album. It's good. Anything that has songs about vampires can't be all bad.
Vampire.
But the other important point.
I like here, getting serious now.
Here we go. Here's an important. If let's say you're a young person and you're like, I'm going to collect hardcore records.
Yeah.
DYS almost signed to Enigma Records.
Yeah.
Now Enigma Records famously put out the shit album by every band you ever liked as a kid.
Did they put out that stinker that we're going to get to know in the Jewel in the Shit Crown?
I think they might have.
I think they did.
But here's the thing, you see. This goes back to what we were speaking about earlier. These were often the first ones you heard because Enigma had a big distribution thing going. So distributors or stores would buy a bunch of the shit off them, not be able to sell it, then sell it cheap.
Yeah.
So in the 1980s or early 90s when you had no money, you could buy these records for a pound.
Yeah.
And like Enigma, like, really did all the shit albums. They did the shit 7 Seconds, the shit Vandals, the shit stuff that we're going to talk about in a minute. I don't want to give away our... You know, they did the shit Dead Milkmen, even though I like some of that stuff. But, you know, they did, like, the bad album by everybody. So if you see Enigma...
They were the Relapse records of their day.
It's the bad album of the fucking... The only good thing they did, which they nickel out of print.
I know what they did.
The Crispin Hellion Glover record.
Yeah, they also did Frolic Through the Park by Death Angel, which I really
there
like.
There you go.
And the first Death Angel.
But they did like the shit Pajama Slave Dancers. They did the shit everybody.
Yeah. So did DYS do... If this wasn't on Enigma, but they nearly signed
to Enigma. They almost signed to Enigma.
So basically...
Apparently they'd even stopped playing their old songs and were doing Van Halen covers and stuff.
Oh my God. What we're basically saying here then is Enigma, association with Enigma Records is a hallmark of shititude.
The death of art.
The death of art.
That should be on
Enigma
our...
Enigma Records.
The death of
the
art.
The death of art.
That's
TYS's third album, The Death of Art.
But it didn't stop there with the Boston band.
Oh no! There was a lot of... Well, there wasn't that. There was a couple of Boston bands who, again... Straw Dogs, it used to be the FUs. Mm. The Straw Dogs album isn't as bad as I remember. It does still have... A lot of these bands more just kind of went rock and roll. You know, they tried to have a bit more, like, rock and roll. But
yeah, they became, like, later Stiff Little Fingers in those bands, where they became a bit ploddy, a bit mid-paced. Like
Gangrene's last record as well. Gangrene were pretty good in their crossover days, but that older Budweiser record is a honking pile of shit festooned with nuggets of diarrhea.
There are albums that if you... played to a younger person now, they would never understand what you could have liked it possibly.
I feel like they, if you play this to a younger person, they would look at you with a level of disgust normally reserved for cats and humans.
Yes.
But the Straw Dogs record, I briefly want to mention, because the first Straw Dogs EP is that kind of plodding Motorhead. I think they all wanted to be Motorhead, apart from... SSD, who I don't know what the fuck they were trying to do.
They should have just formed a band called SSDYS.
Yeah.
It's been like a 12-person
DYS hair metal wanted band. To be like a punk Iron Maiden, but couldn't play their instruments.
Yeah.
Straw Dogs kind of did the Motorhead sort of upbeat rock and roll thing, but they also included an atrocious cover of Tie Your Mother Down by Queen. The less said about that, the better.
Yeah. Now, the thing about them as well was they started out as the FUs.
Yeah.
They were like a really serious hardcore band.
Yeah.
Like the FUs.
I mean, serious in that they were serious about offending everybody.
But they're fucking classics. They're stone cold classics, though. It's fucking My America. I know they got into trouble about that, but they were obviously being a bit tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
And you know, and then they were quoted, see, the circle comes full.
Yeah, yeah.
By Enigma band, The Dead Milkmen, who went, we don't like blacks and we don't like Jews, but we like the FUs.
There you go.
You see?
Let's get
Tiny Town, just in case anyone thinks they were being racist. They were being ironical.
I like how you're like asserting your knowledge there. dropping the name of the song in, quoting a dead Milton.
Yeah,
40 years of age.
Yeah, I'm old.
A statesman.
Statesman.
I'm older than you.
You are, yeah.
I am. By like a month or something.
Probably. When's your birthday? April.
April.
Yeah, I'm June.
Anyway, let's get the fuck out of Boston.
Mm.
Boston, we bid you adieu, and we now move to not Boston, LA.
But oh, not Boston, or not LA. What was that record?
I've completely forgotten. Boston, I was going to make LA. That
Boston, this my, is Boston, not
my
LA.
My old man, hardcore Alzheimer's memory has kicked in. So there are.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, let's start with the other one first, because I feel like the rest of the podcast is going to be that album. So, Junkyard.
Oh, yeah.
Junkyard are... I mean, Junkyard, we should...
Junkyard are shit.
Junkyard are kind of the other extreme. Junkyard weren't a punk band who went metal. Junkyard were a southern rock slash... Sunset Strip?
Yeah.
Type band made up of people in punk bands. So there was some big boys and there was...
A Minor Threat.
A Minor Threat.
Who was also in Government Issue.
Brian Baker.
And
Brian
and
Baker of the Dag Nasty musical group. Also in a band with the other Chancer, Dave Smalley. Those two lads. Doesn't speak well.
And he was in... Like, he was in everybody. He was Minor Threat and Government Issue. And he was in Sound, wasn't he? He was in the first lineup of Sound.
But most importantly, was he was in Junkyard. And Junkyard were fucking shocking.
They fucking were, man.
So Junkyard, we watched Simple Man by Junkyard. We're going to listen to a bit of Simple Man by Junkyard.
Simple fucking song by Junkyard.
Skinner's Man would have been another name for that song.
Yeah, they sound like the worst bits of southern rock mixed with like Warrant or something.
Yeah, they were kind of a bit more like a slightly more like... I like that other band we're getting to in a minute. What they were doing was they were, I feel like they were doing that kind of more like, you know, less, you know, the other crowd were definitely all about the Hairspray. They were more like, yeah, we're like street guys. We don't wear cod pieces and spandy pants. We wear like, but we're, you know, we're still.
Basically every song
ladies,
goes.
Hello. You
goes,
know what I mean?
Dun-dun.
Yeah.
Dun-dun. They were shit.
We like.
And.
Balling and ballroom dancing. Ballroom brawling and balling.
They're the band that kind of prove. The argument for this stuff, when you read interviews with these bands, they always go, oh, we were just getting better at playing.
No.
Brian Baker was a fucking exceptional musician. Mm. And in Junkyard, he seems to have forgotten how to play the guitar. It's like fucking three chord southern rock nonsense.
Yeah.
This is the guy who like wrote most of the Minor Threat songs for fuck's sake with Ian McKay, like all those amazing guitar and bass.
I mean,
parts
like even the guitar playing the Jack Nasty records alone.
It's incredible,
mind blown.
He was like a real shredder.
And similarly, it's like the bass player from the Big Boys in this band, right?
Mm. Who was like
who was a fucking
funk machine?
Funk machine. So why these people dumb down?
Ka-ching!
The invisible cash register is open for business.
And you know what? I'm pretty sure Junkyard didn't make a lot of money.
No. No. Here's a thing that I don't think you know. And again, we have the laptop open here for research purposes. Andrew Bush.
Yes.
I present to you the fact that, as far as I know, Junkyard are back together. Minus Brian Baker.
I saw some reunion YouTube stuff that I didn't really look at because fuck.
Yeah,
I didn't even want
you
to hear
saw
it.
You just
going.
Said you saw it, man.
Well, I mean, I saw it in a list of Junkyard.
Junkyard Hollywood.
Fucking hell.
They look like the dudes that present
all. Are you
all
sure
those...
that isn't Brian Baker with the sunglasses?
No. That's the emaciated corpse of.
You know you're in fucking trouble
Rocks.
When your reformed band are opening for Circus of Fucking Power.
Now, Circus of Power. I feel like they were like Circus of Power and I, you know, was more what they were going for, but there was just this kind of terrible LA edge to it that sucked. This picture of Junkyard, I'm looking at this thinking, you know all those terrible, well they're not terrible, but crap programs on cable channels about, you know, souping up motorbikes.
Yeah, like Discovery fucking...
Yeah. Changing Hot Wheels or whatever.
I bought this car and I just threw 20 grand into it and I'm a fucking greaser. Basically looks like the cast of Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah. 20 years later. So we've contractually, but Junkyard,
in fairness, signed to Geffen at the same time Guns N' Roses did, and their album didn't come out that much later. So you know,
yeah,
they were a bigger band than you would remember them being. They had the big label deal. They got big fucking tours. They sold a lot of records. I'm sure Brian Baker made money.
Fair play to him.
You know.
Now I'm glad that you mentioned Guns N' Roses, because Guns N' Roses are weirdly a sort of catalyst for the absolute spinning Ferris wheel of human feces that we're about to discuss.
Oh, God.
The blazing inferno of crap that was TSOL's Hit and Run album. I think this is probably the single greatest offender on this. I mean, at least the Boston bands and some of the other bands kind of maintain some level of like, oh, we'll throw in some fast bits.
Mm.
TSOL, who at this point, as far as we can work out, only had one original
Ron member, Emery, I
Ron
think.
Emery, really are the definition of a band who just went glam.
Oh, my God. Like, terribly, terribly.
They sound like
The Dogs Demure or something.
I don't even know where to start with this fucking record, man.
Sometimes I feel like I am dying inside.
If this is...
Okay, well, here's a good place to start, right? What happened with this fucking band was that Jack Grisham had left the band.
Yeah.
And... It was just a fucking Ron Emery and others, and they kept the name, I guess, because Grisham left. It was a situation where they could keep the band name, so they continued on as this shit band. And this is how bad it got. About a year or two into it, a load of the original TSOL guys got together to do a gig as the original TSOL. I guess Jack Grisham needed some money or whatever.
Yeah,
and the current TSOL at the time actually served legal papers on the original TSOL, so they had to just perform the gig under their given names.
Yeah.
They couldn't even perform as TSOL.
Let's actually just think about the hilarity of this. Jack Grisham, needing money. I feel like if he needed money from the other members of TSOL, he would have just beaten the shit out of them.
He would have just fought them, yeah.
This is the cold lake. I feel like this is the cold lake of punk.
But it's even worse, because as much as people go on about Cold Lake, that was just a metal band playing it different. They went for the money, right? But these are guys who would have been beaten up metal guys probably 2 or 3 years before.
Yeah.
They were fucking like really anti-authority. Yeah. They were like anti the mainstream. You know, these were bands who were putting out like...
And then the next thing
they're writing songs about... fuck the government records.
Yeah. The next thing they're writing songs about being 16 and being a cowboy who's heading to the gallows.
Oh my God.
I presume that's what that song 16 is about.
What's the name of this song? The Name is Love.
The Name is Love.
I think we might have to hear some of The Name is Love.
I think in the show notes on this, it's drop a bit of The Name is Love in here. We're going to pause this and just watch the video again just to bask in the horror. Yeah, I mean, I don't even think this is the worst offender on the album, but what we'll do is, because I want to play like bits of a couple of songs, and I can't do that. So, you can hear The Name is Love in the background, as we essentially Beavis and Butthead style wrote this motherfucking shit. Tellingly, this was taken from The Headbangers Ball.
Yeah.
There's a man, is this dude playing drums on a banister? Oh my God.
He looks like a fucking, like a cross-dressing truck driving alcoholic. He was like giving blowjobs for fucking 3 meth or something. Listen to this shit.
Oh, I can't listen to it.
Yeah, fuck that, man. Fuck this.
Yeah, we'll stick the whole video in there.
It's probably the best example of a band in America, because we're going to get onto a couple of English bands.
Yeah.
But this is probably the greatest American... One of the greatest
American disaster stories.
Yeah, because you talk about SSD and DYS, but, you know, people are going to give out to me for saying this, but those bands were always kind of, not second-rate bands, but they were never very big selling bands. Whereas TSOL, like, were a band who used to outdraw Black Flag.
Yeah,
they
outsold Black Flag. Here's my Guns N' Roses link. I was doing a bit of research on this absolute bag of shite, and apparently the first place I ever heard of TSOL was in the video when I was a kid, the video for Sweet Child of Mine. Yep. Stephen
Adler
is wearing a TSOL t-shirt
just before,
so I knew there was a Guns N' Roses link. Apparently they were all buddies, Guns N' Roses released Appetite for Destruction, I think, the same week as this record came out, and the two bands toured together.
Yep.
And apparently this album outsold all of the proper TSOL's other albums because of that tour.
Yeah.
So there was briefly, apparently, a time where they could have been the next big
thing. That's definitely the first time we heard them was, he has the TSOL. I thought they were called TSOL. I didn't really know what it was.
Like, what's TSOL? They're so...
And who were they signed to?
Enigma. there's so many awful things about this record, but the absolute low point on an album full of low points is Good Morning Blues.
It's the lowest point.
Not content with being like a slightly lethargic, faster pussycat, they then attempted to tackle some sort of Stevie Ray Vaughan-esque bollocks.
A lethargic, faster, but slower pussycat.
Sleeping pussycat.
Sleeping pussycat.
So they basically talk about how you haven't had the blues.
Oh my god, I had the blues after I heard this.
Blues descended upon me with a terrible rage.
Yes, they're
number one cause of the blues.
TSOL.
TSOL's Good Morning Blues. Now, it's not even like, I mean, you know, my limited understanding of the blues, the stuff I like is old.
Think they just misspelled booze.
Yeah.
I'm not mistaken, quite a few of this lineup ended up coming a cropper.
Did they?
Drug abuse and.
I can see why. That sort of thing. I feel like they were probably developing their own coping mechanisms for the turgid muck they were releasing.
Out of the Jack Grisham and into the glam.
Yeah.
I think the worst thing about them is that they completely did an about face. There's no aspect of this stuff that would make you think they were a punk band.
I know.
Or a hardcore band.
Yeah. At any point. Now, I had this weird idea in my head when we started doing the list that at least one of these bands did the classic 80s thing of having a saxophone solo.
Mm.
And I couldn't find one. So I'm pretty sure, like a lot of things, I've imagined it. Like the way that I'm absolutely convinced 100% that I've heard Nick Cave cover I'm So Excited by the Pointer Sisters. But there is absolutely no evidence of this whatsoever. Might have been asleep when it happened. But I am certain as the day is long that is a thing that somewhere happens. He delivered it in the full...
In an excited fashion.
I'm so excited. You know what I mean? But it probably didn't happen, but I'm convinced it did.
No,
but I was convinced one of these bands had a honking saxophone ripper, and they didn't, and I was kind of hoping I'd be able to trace it back to this sexy saxophone man from The Lost Boys or whatever.
You know, he turns up in the second Lost Boys, only he's about 16.
Oh, God, no.
So it's like some old fat guy.
Actually, we should do an episode about him. When we turn this off, I'll tell you an amazing thing about where his musical career went.
Okay.
But, I couldn't find this imaginary saxophone solo, but what I could find, and I think it's in the Horrendous Blues song, which, to be honest with you, just shut my brain down about halfway through. There are bongos on this album.
Fucking hell.
Conga drums.
Bongos. I'll tell you, anyone who thinks we're exaggerating
disco
about these albums,
biscuit tins, whatever you want to call them,
go and try and listen to any of the albums we've spoken about. Every one of them is a fucking chore.
Yeah.
If TSOL had made Appetite for Destruction, I could listen to that, but this is not that.
No, this is just a weird man doing things with his hips while waving a plastic Thunderbird guitar around.
Yeah.
And I imagine a great deal of the recording budget money for this was spent on hairspray.
And cocaine.
I reckon they styled their hair with residue of
cocaine.
They would melt it into a fine...
Snort hair.
They just do their lines and then be like, hey, how much have we got? Get out, guys. Stick it in it. You know what I mean? And they just added it to like a...
How much coke does the drummer have?
Added it to like a bottle of 7-Up. Put it in a little spray can.
Nice.
Instance... Flame retardant drug hair all the way. So yes, good luck to you, TSOL. You're a share of absolute bastards.
Yes.
What's the matter, boy? The blues got to ya. We'll be right back.
Okay, so real quick before we leave the US, let's talk about Void.
Yeah, I want to give them an honourable mention because this first honourable mention. Right. They made an album called Potion for Bad Dreams, which was never released. But it's been bootlegged to fucking death, I'm sure. You go on YouTube, you'll find it all.
Yeah.
And it's their...
That's where we found it, so...
Yeah, it's their attempt at a, I guess, a kind of commercial rock album. So there's one song in particular called So Beautiful, So Dangerous. Now, I fucking love this because it's Void, who are incapable of doing anything correctly. You know, you're talking about a band who were trying to be Minor Threat and ended up sounding like fucking Stockhausen. So when they try to be glam metal, it's fucking amazing. It's unlistenably insane.
It's quite a piece of work, all right.
It's like when you're in your first hardcore band and you're trying to write songs.
What's the name of the song again? So Beautiful.
So Beautiful, So Dangerous, I think.
I feel like that's an ad for like a men's fragrance. Oh,
So Beautiful, Yet So Dangerous.
Yet So Dangerous. I feel like that's the tagline for Johnny Depp's Sausage or whatever the thing that they have.
Yet So Dangerous by Void.
Void for angry young men. Yeah.
Void for people who can't play in time.
Void Owl Sassoon.
I need to say though, I'm not being ironic. I'm not ironically going to look.
It's fucking sense of irony.
It's fucking great. It's great. It's fucked up. It's great. And Bubba Dupree, the guy who played guitar in that band, actually ended up being, I think he toured with Soundgarden and stuff as a second guitarist.
There was a couple of those guys. Like
quite a regarded second guitarist.
What's that? Alice in Chains, the guy that replaced Lane Staley, was in Neon Christ.
There you go. Yeah, a lot of these guys.
A fine band who thankfully didn't make one of the kind of terrible records that we're talking about now.
Unlike COC, who made one of all of the terrible records.
Sake, let's not get into COC. I think the only thing, Andrew, it's too early in the morning.
I think the only thing that you haven't done is a shit glam album.
Yeah, they haven't done a death metal record yet. COC were a fucking headache. I mean, they made one of like probably my favorite hardcore records, Life or Night. But yeah,
and now they make Thin Lizzy records.
Yeah, though they did have a song about telling a bird to fuck, like an actual bird to fuck off. Not like bird flying for lady.
Called
Albatross. 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 Why have turned into the dude from fucking Talks of London? Surely you know COC's Albatross.
Albatross. I was listening to it on a compact disc.
Compact discs.
A compact disc.
I can hear you, Clem Fandango. I can hear you, Reed Mullen.
Reed Mullen.
Oh man, Reed Mullen flirting with Vanessa Warwick on Headbangers Ball.
Vanessa Warwick.
I think it's a silent W. It's Vanessa Ark. But do you remember that? Like,
I have that whole episode on a video tape.
I think it was a young impressionable man who couldn't really talk to ladies, and I'm now a 4-year-old man who still can't talk to
him. If only I could be Reed Mullen.
Yeah, Reed Mullen was like, oh, he's so confident. He's constantly touching her knee.
You see what she does now?
She's like a property developer. She's a
very famous property developer.
Reed Mullen's still a drummer.
He's still
so all that, oh, Vanessa, you've got some flakes on your knee or whatever that shit was. Got him nowhere.
Flakes. Do you reckon Ricky, corrosion of conformity, were they the flakes?
Do you reckon Ricky Ricardo von Warwick knocked the shite out of him after that?
I don't know.
Were they...
Ricky Warwick probably just drank Jack Daniels and...
I used to see Ricky Warwick in the Centra near where Debt used to rehearse years ago. Making...
I liked the...
Enchanting conversation with the confused young lady behind the deli counter as he ordered his hot wedges of a Saturday morning on his way to write power ballads about the troubles of Belfast on a motorbike.
I have to say, as a young man.
How many times would it be? In my infancy, on the fields.
In the late 1980s. In Crumlin.
Home of Philip Lynott.
I once got my hands on a copy of Live, whatever it was called, by the Almighty. And it was a fine album. So I did enjoy The Almighty, that one album.
Yeah.
Before they did all the Jamie Reed art and tried to be the Sex Pistols.
I liked the one where they turn into Alice in Chains.
That could be a whole show. That could be a whole show featuring Warrant and The Almighty. Metal bands who tried to become grunge bands.
Who tried to become other metal bands. Void is okay. And the other quick shout out, because I couldn't... This and the but the other big stinker we're about to talk about were two things I just couldn't fucking make it all the way through it. Pronunciation is going to be terrible on this. I actually have a friend from Finland. Maybe I should ring her and go, like, how do I pronounce this shit? But
this.
Even me trying to explain it to her,
it'll be funnier.
Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It'll be funnier. I almost think you're having a brain hemorrhage.
So I've written down, so the punk band Ristitit, who I know and you know, but
Ristitit,
but I can't pronounce their name. embrace the teachings of Western philosopher Billy Idol in their Eurovision rock incarnation as Puhat Nugget. I have to give a shout out to my friend Ralph.
Puhat Nugget.
My friend Ralph posted this on Facebook, and I wasn't aware of it. And I found the album on Spotify, and I got three songs in. And by Christ, I wanted to gouge my ears out with my own fucking kneecaps.
Good.
It was.
It's terrible.
It was like having. It was like having a hairdresser urinate into my ears listening to this, of course.
I'm like one of those dehydrated pisses.
Just like a post hangover, maybe a little bit of blood in there.
Yeah, UTI all the way.
Maybe
ketones.
Maybe the end of, like, they'd accidentally ingested some TSOLs, yes, cocaine,
some
hairdo.
Protein in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
It's not good.
It's
the only thing though.
It makes Roxette look like a power violence.
We were saying though earlier, the only advantage for Finnish bands who became metal bands was they didn't have to change how they dressed, because Finnish bands always
glamorous.
Yeah, they did. They kind of had an exploited thing going.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah.
Instead of making spikes, they just had to, you know.
Yeah.
Make.
So I don't really know enough about this band to talk about it more, but there was one or two songs I encountered that I'm going to stick some links to because they are just.
I get the feeling amazing. They probably saw the success of, like, the Hanoi Rocks.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, we can do this.
I don't really know what
but
they
don't.
Doing.
They're fucking
but it's,
shit.
It's, I mean, the nearest comparison I can give you, I'm going to wait till you finish your coffee before I say this, because I know what's going to happen otherwise. Honestly, the nearest comparison I can give you is a less rock and roll Tiger Tales.
Fuck.
Remember Tiger Tales?
Do I?
Welsh glam smiths.
Nah, Nuclear Rocket.
Oh my god, you can remember an entire song. They look like 6ix Sputnik.
They sound
like
shit.
shit back. Anyway, okay. For our last stop on this.
Well, no, can we just do a little.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we've one other.
Yeah.
See, these are an odd band to mention because they were always shit. So I can't even go, they became shit.
Oh.
But we're talking about the Anti-Nowhere League.
Yeah.
Who
I have no time for anyway, but I was impressed when I saw the levels.
Their shitosity, yeah.
Their beshitment, isn't it, Kate?
Yeah, they basically went from being, you know, what your ma would think punk was. What are punks like? They would be, they're rude and they have stupid hair.
Basically what they did was, you summed this up pretty well, they went John Farnham.
Yeah, literally, I've got notes written down here and they say 80s John Farnham toss. That's my entire note.
The leavings of John Farnham. So the leavings of John Farnham.
Oh, they're fucking shit.
I would have said they were like a sort of
like it wouldn't be out of place on like the Lost Boys soundtrack.
It wouldn't be. And the indicator that they were serious was Animal shaved his beard off.
Yes, was Animal just looks like he just looks like your dad in the fucking
Animal
80s,
looks like the Croc Fox from the Mighty Boosh.
it's just again it's this thing that kind of irks me most. Is that the bands who were the most punk became the most glam. And the Anti-Nowhere League, who were like the most offensive, became the least offensive.
They kind of just went for this weird 80s AOR
it sounds like
radio pop music.
It
but
genuinely
it's jarring because it's the band who wrote the line, "I even sucked an old man's cock."
Yeah. It sounds like sounds like fucking Tapao.
It actually genuinely does sound like a
metal. You know, it sounds
Tapao.
Like a
That's
lot of like Bonnie Tyler, Tapao,
comparison.
Like these kind of club bands.
Yeah. So the album, I listened to the album. It's called The Perfect Crime. I feel like I would have loved that when I was about 8.
Yeah.
It's a bit Mr. and Mr. I'm alright with Mr. and Mr.
Yeah, but it makes fucking
Yeah, I don't know. It's a very weak. It makes Meatloaf sound like Slayer.
Yeah. Interestingly, it's the only part of their discography I'd ever go back to and listen to more than once. But so yeah, that was kind of an odd one. I'm gonna let them off.
That's
that,
why
it just seemed like a kind of an ill-judged.
It was a business move.
It was a business move, and I mean they very quickly reverted back to what they did. Yeah. But it's an interesting little nugget in musical history.
Mm. And in fairness to the Anti-Nowhere League, I always get the feeling that they're kind of smart lads,
yeah,
kind of taking the piss.
Yeah,
unlike bands like The Exploited, who are just fucking simpletons.
I always thought it was simple. Like an English version of a band like Fear, where they're clearly just, you know,
exactly. They're guys who can play. Yeah. They're kind of a bit older than punks,
but they were like, yeah, let's make the cartoon version.
And like Fear is great, so there, you know, I'm not gonna argue.
There was a couple of other English bands that kind of. Got a bit. A lot of English bands kind of went thrash.
Yeah, they just became crossover bands, didn't they?
Like yeah, which we've. In case people are wondering why we haven't really discussed that,
like English
that
would be Dogs. And these
English Dogs.
Things.
I reckon Where Legend Began by English Dogs is a fucking amazing record. I got that one as a kid and I had no idea
didn't
what punk
boy.
Was and just it's great. It's
the
just
guitarist
brief,
on that is the Prodigy's guitarist.
Yeah, Kiss
it?
Butt.
Mm.
But and then you had like bands like Broken Bones. So a lot of them kind of went crossover. There
yeah,
wasn't
they just
a
became,
whole lot of.
Like, yeah. Again, to fucking mention the idiots that are The Exploited, they did their terrible trash metal albums, didn't they?
Yeah.
I firmly believe, I've said this before, maybe you'll agree,
yeah.
If The Exploited hadn't had such a good fucking logo with the skull, I don't think they ever would have been famous.
They still owe Pusshead money for that, right?
You could
that's
just,
the myth.
You could just draw that shit on your jacket.
Yeah.
That's why people like The Exploited, let's be honest.
Let's be honest, it's the... we could get esoteric and say it's a form of sigil magic where bands with fancy things you could draw, like the DRI man. If you could draw it on your bag, your band became even more popular.
The Suicidal Tendencies, the little ST, but
it's the ultimate.
The Napalm Death logo was always good. A bit of Tippex and a pen, you'd
the
put
Kennedys,
it back your park.
Anything that
the Black
was,
Flag bars,
yeah, the Carcass one. If you were feeling particularly,
I can still draw that.
I can still do the Anthrax logo. I can still do the Slayer one because a retarded monkey could do that.
The Def Leppard one is kind of. From the cut from the same cloth as the Slayer one.
Yeah,
I think.
Were there any? Okay, so yeah, actually, that's a bit like what the fucking Anti-Nowhere League record sounds like. It's a bit like a tamer Def Leppard.
It's just very lame,
easy going. Your mum would like it.
I'd say it was big in Germany.
I would imagine
it's a bit David Hasselhoff.
They probably soundtracked many an ad for German Twix ripoff
for
Ballisto
for Natwest.
Natwest. last in our run through our whistle stop tour of,
I got to rub my hands together in glee because of this.
I'm gonna do a little dance.
Yeah. Now
you knew it was coming.
Now.
No!
No!
Everything I said at the start of this episode about how it boils down to the singing and the guitaring. This is the prime example of where, when you got those things wrong.
Like career ruiningly wrong.
Yeah, it's the one that everyone listening to this knew we were going to talk about. It's Grave New World by Discharge.
Oh, fuck it.
An album I have literally, and I've tried three times this week, never been able to make following week. Actually filled so fiery hot with anger was I after being insulted by these bouffant vegan bastards.
Buffoons.
That, oh my god!
One time to annoy Andy from Yurt, I started posting this on his Facebook page song by song until he sent me an irate message asking me to stop. That's how bad this is. Like, it's
The
it's Jerry Fireball Mudflap. all the way. It's garbage.
It's this is the worst. This is so bad that I can only use an offensive analogy to explain it. This is the 9/11 of hardcore punk in the '80s.
It's not good.
That's
for
again,
anyone who
a vast understatement.
Yeah, for anyone who might not know who's listening to this, yeah. Maybe you don't know who Discharge.
I'll do the history on this bit.
Go on.
This is my special subject. So Discharge basically made one of probably the greatest straight up hardcore record of the or punk record of the '80s, which is Hear Nothing, See Nothing, Say Nothing. They invented the Discharge haiku, which is basically where you take about four words involving normally nuclear
protesting,
war, protest,
and surviving,
and children. And you stick them into a four-line poem that you repeat over and over again over the simplest but most skull-crackingly heavy
and then you
ever.
Sing it like when Lemmy goes for the high, the kind of higher bits that he can't do yeah. properly, so he just sounds like gravel.
Discharge, to bring it up in a circular way around, Discharge were probably what SSD were aiming. I feel like they were like a non-drink straight-edge version of Discharge. I mean, they've yeah. kind of gone on record saying that that's what they were trying to do originally to start out. Discharge also wrote, I think, the greatest punk rock song of all time, which is Protest and Survive, / My Chest Hair's on Fire, /
Which Anthrax
My movie. Chest Hair's Still Fine. Could be any of those things. My younger brothers used to think the lyrics of that song were the sandwich mutilation of the human race. We sit on cars. It's up to us. We sit on cars. My chest hair is so fine. Or my chest hair is on fire.
I like I'm your not, version.
My chest hair is on fire. I feel like his chest hair was definitely on fire because I feel like Cal
because the voice got a bit high.
Cal from Discharge spent a lot of the photo sessions around the time of this album with his shirt off.
Yeah,
and clearly his chest hair had been singed in some way to remove it for a glamorous means.
Up until now, we've spoken about bands who changed their styles dramatically. Now, you could argue that TSOL even had started making kind of more synthy music before. They were adding keyboards and getting a bit more musical.
Yeah.
Whereas Discharge went from being kind of fucking, you know, not to say anything about it because I don't think how good you play is an indication of good the music is.
I think
but it was kind of like numbskully. It was really...
Yeah, but Discharge were just pure, I mean, unadulterated Neanderthal power. If they had been fancy musicians at the time of Hear Nothing, See Nothing or Why, they wouldn't be the same band.
Yeah, like as a reference, I would say Discharge were a really big influence on early Napalm Death.
Oh, yeah.
These sort of bands. So let that be your... You know, they were up there with Siege.
We're going to presume at this point that if you're listening to this and you don't know who Discharge are, you'd think you're listening to the wrong podcast.
Yeah, this.
But, So, Grave New World came out in 1986.
5 or 6, yeah.
We're fact-checking as we speak. It's from... Oh my god, I pulled this up on YouTube and the person who posted a video of a song from the album has described it thusly. From their gay glam album, Grave New World.
Yeah, stop it man, stop it, we're having to hear it.
We can't listen to it.
So,
Now
here's the funny thing. My first exposure to this was, again, the thing we spoke about earlier, where Discharge were a big band.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been selling records probably at the rate of, like, Crass and all these
sort of bands.
So, when this album came along, obviously all the shops ordered a fucking billion copies that no one bought.
Yep.
So you'd go into town of a Saturday morning, little fucking 12-year-old metal punk kids, and you'd find it for a pound, and you'd be like, fucking Discharge album for a pound.
Yep.
So my friend, John Emmett, bought it and we all went back to his house and we laughed at it and we laughed at him for buying it but he never sold it. So years later, last year, this would have been maybe 1991, we're talking about 92, years later, like last year, he's selling me a bunch of fucking records he doesn't want anymore. He's like, I've got these, but a bunch of kids, I don't need all these records of kids, I don't, you know, I'm not listening to Destruction and Sodom anymore. Well, I am, so I'm buying records off him, and this album is there, and I'm like, you know this is worth something. And he's like, yeah, but you can just have it because it's terrible. So by now it had been reissued. But Discharge fans are so, they're such apologists for this shit, that I rang another friend of mine, Colin, who I knew would want it, and I went, I have a copy of this on clay, an original copy.
Yeah.
It's fucking garbage.
Yeah.
And he gave me like 10 amazing albums for it. He traded me amazing albums for it.
Sorry, Colin. We're not Disney here.
No, but no.
We salute your sheer unbridled enthusiasm for shit music.
It goes to prove that with a band like Discharge, people will kind of excuse.
Yeah. I mean, let's not forget there's actually a band called Disclose whose entire existence is dedicated to sounding like Grey New World or Discharge. And which Sned is in. And I love Sned.
Yeah.
Hello, Sned. I love you.
But...
And I still can't work out if that's like kind of tongue in cheek or not.
But I remember hearing this album in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. And as kids who were metalers,
yeah,
who had gotten into punk,
yeah, like somebody's older brother taped you.
Oh, like we laughed.
It was like Discharge again, like they were the band that were probably, them or the Misfits were the first punk band you heard if you grew up in like the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, like Minor Threat, somebody's, the Misfits,
yeah, Discharge. Somebody's older brother who was into metal had one of those records.
Yeah, you'd get
either like, taped you like the first Misfits. You know, tapes you like Earth AD or Hear Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. You'd get a tape at like the Electro Hippies and Discharge and Minor Threat on it or something. But like, even as metal kids, man, how we fucking laughed at Grave New World.
Let's talk about why this album is so bad. I think really the vocals are
terrible.
I mean, it sounds like Mr. Cadbury's parrot being like used as a bagpipe or something.
It's fucking,
I don't know what's going on. The sound that comes out of
Kala is not a singer. It is fair to say
Kala is definitely not a singer, but even if, I don't know what the word for the sound that escapes,
wailing.
I think the nearest comparison I can give you, I mean, we're obviously going to play a bit of this. The sound that I always immediately think of whenever I have the misfortune to hear any of this album, when I'm about the town and it obviously plays through the speakers in the local precinct, is the sound of a gigantic... You know that Discharge song, An Enormous Door Slamming in Hell or whatever it's called? This album would be less that and more an enormous balloon releasing air at an incredibly slow rate.
And a normal poop is dropping in a toilet. Myself and my friends used to, there's a bit in it where I think he's singing about heroin abuse or something. There's a bit where he's going like, mother, mother. And we used to sing that at like 10 years later. We were ringing each other going, mother, mother.
Let's talk about Cal's use of language, because I talked about the Discharge haiku. Some of the song titles on this are just weird. We dare speak a moment only.
Does this have Sleep in Hope on it?
Sleep in Hope is on this.
What? You're sleeping in hope that they'll wake up and this won't happen?
Yeah. Like, but, I mean, grammatically, is that even a thing? We dare speak a moment only. I wonder, is this why they were so popular in Japan? I feel like I'm going to say terribly
because
racist.
This is the thing.
But you know the way that a lot of the Japanese bands would do the thing, like Lip Cream, when they have, like, all the lyrics in Japanese and then the chorus would be in English?
Yeah.
But it's kind of garbled English because obviously it's your second language.
We dare speak.
I feel like a lot of these people
might
have just kind of gone learned English from Discharge. And Cal's unique grasp of the English language.
But it does, to kind of put it in context.
Yeah.
Before this album, Discharge had toured in the United States and they were playing to 1,000 people every night.
Yeah.
For this little English independent band, right?
Yeah.
1,000 people every night. When they toured this album, they apparently, like, people were just going, like, there's bootlegs.
Yeah, there's a very famous recording floating around.
You can hear, like, 1,000 people just going, fuck you, fuck you. And the famous story from this tour is they were playing with the Bad Brains.
Yeah.
And was it Dr. No perhaps got
HR.
Oh, HR got a trash can full of water and basically dumped it on the band and their amplifiers while they were playing.
I've pulled up the... this is an album so bad that even the Wikipedia entry for this album makes for incredible comedic reading.
Come on, let's find some.
So let me... I feel like I should do the Toast of London voice.
Yeah.
Grave New World is the third studio album by English hardcore punk band Discharge, released in 1986 by Cave Records. The album marks a radical stylistic change, which is a bit like saying that you know, an explosive device. Like, it's a bit like saying Shoko Asahara made people feel a little bit chesty when he released gas into the subway. Exactly,
yes. It radically changed people's breathing.
Radically, yeah. With the band abandoning their previous hardcore punk style for a softer and more accessible. Now, two words I would not apply to this album in any way, shape, or form are softer or more accessible.
No.
I can't, like, the Da Vinci Code, or whatever it's called, novels are, you know, it's more accessible. Yeah, and I'd rather be hit in the face with a brick.
No, it is. It's as accessible as fucking Fort Knox. Like I said earlier, as kids who had grown up on fucking metal, we couldn't listen to the album. So it wasn't accessible because punks hated it and metal people were just like, what the fuck is this? Like, and to say it's softer, it's the most trebly fucking album in the world. It sounds like a big black album. Yeah. It's like a big black produced glam rock album.
Vocalist Kelvin Carl Morris also switched from his previous shouting vocals to falsetto ones. Yep, for this album. Morris later blamed his rediscovery of Led Zeppelin for this decision. The tempos also became much slower and a higher quality sound. Quality is a negative, perhaps not a word out of place to this album in any way, shape, or form.
It's on par with. Remember when you were a kid and you could get like you know, the Samson album that was released on Bronze where it looked like his fucking teenage sister drew the cover and it had song titles like I Wish I Was the Saddle on a Schoolgirl Bike.
Yeah.
It's on par with that shit. Like, it's fucking two thumbs down. It's just garbage.
Awful. They really did. I mean, there's a couple of, like, I think Discharge literally became, you remember Bad News? Okay, for anybody to know, Bad News is arguably the thing that came before Spinal Tap. The guys who did The Young Ones, the comic strip in England, did Bad News, which is a heavy metal parody, came out I think a year before Spinal Tap and then re-emerged in the 80s. I feel like Discharge might have thought Bad News were a real band and decided to be that band.
They thought it was because aspirational. Because
that's the only other record I've ever heard that sounds like this. And that's a comedy record. Even down to the band photos.
Yeah, it's...
Like, there's a lot of, like, lounging with one hand in your pocket and the other behind your back.
There's a lot of headbands.
A lot
of tight vests.
It all just looks like an ad for Limara, the Bonnie Tyler voiced women's hygiene spray.
In Love Believe.
That was, In Love Believe. See, again, where did this guy...
See if we can pull up some lyrics.
Okay, let's do it. Discharge.
Yeah, well, we're pulling up some lyrics. You can listen to some of this fucking...
We apologize.
To the horror.
We apologize.
Grave New Year's.
There is a Japanese hardcore band whose name escapes me, who had a song called My Disgraceful Conduct Brings Dishonor Upon Your Family. And with the song we're about to play you, Discharge, we apologise for them bringing disgraceful conduct upon your family.
Here we go, Grave New World lyrics.
Right.
This is going to be terrible, lads.
Sample lyrics from the stonking heavy metal blunderbuss that was.
Oh, In Love Believe.
Believe.
Okay.
Speed the day. Peace and love arise from the darkness. Dread and rear from the pit. This pit of hate for this day's drive. Go on loving.
Go on loving. On and on.
In love believing.
In love believe. Keep the candle burning.
Maybe one day we'll see things the same.
Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid.
Here we go.
Afraid to care.
Extend the kind arm of infinity all over the human sphere. That's either an incredibly weird metaphor for some kind of sexy business.
Release our troubled hearts and grant our children peace.
Is this a hymn that we used to have to sing in
we
school?
We dare speak. It says they laid their practice. That's not even correct grammar.
Hands on it.
They laid their practice hands on
it. I need to... My eyes are exploding with horror.
Now, you see, we're not doing it the credit it deserves because my voice doesn't go that high.
Yeah, if you can imagine these lyrics being essentially delivered by... Well, I mean, you've heard them by now. If the chipmunks, I'd say a human-sized pigeon with a winter plumage. Carl, I mean, again, the music's so bad that I can't describe it. That's really what we should be doing. It's so indescribably bad.
And
it's this weird, they famously did an interview that I've seen when they were on tour around this period, where the first question in the interview is, somebody asked them about, like, you know, why have you gone metal or something? And we don't see this as heavy metal.
I barely see it as music. It's fucking terrible. It's
again, it all goes back to what we stated at the start. The guitarist cannot fucking play.
Yeah, and
Cal, like, he is not a shredder.
And also the cover artist can't draw.
And Cal cannot sing. The cover art is some sort of, like,
it's some sort of
Chinese
weird,
or
it's,
Japanese.
It's like
a man with, like, a Fu Manchu type moustache.
It's Vincent Price or somebody.
And a dragon.
Dressed in, yeah, it's, I really, and then there's weird little symbols. A duck on the left, yes. D for duck. And then,
like a hammer and sickle with
a raccoon on it.
With a raccoon. The old communist raccoon. Red raccoons out.
Freedom
fries all the way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we've done, like, I mean, it. As you can probably glean from this, sort of in the conversation, we're having difficulty explaining how bad this album
is. I think the problem with this description is it makes it sound like it could be fun to listen to this album.
Yeah, it really isn't. And we extend to you now and the arm of infinity. we release our arms of infinity around the globe and extend to you now, listener, the challenge that we want you to listen to Great New World
and
in full.
I guarantee you in the comments under this, when this is put up, people will be fucking apologizing. People will defend this album. There's so many apologists for this.
Man, I'm not putting up comments. Fuck comments.
Yeah,
I don't care what people think.
I kind of do. It's funny, you know. But people will defend this album. You'll be listening to this with someone who'll go, I think that song's all right, and they're an idiot.
That person doesn't like you. They're not your friend.
No.
They will bring their disgraceful conduct will bring dishonor upon your family. If anyone listening to this knows what band put that disgraceful conduct song out, please let me know.
I just hope that they get back to playing this stuff and TSOL come back to their glam thing and they do a joint tour.
Here's the thing, and we'll end this display of madness with this. I feel like inevitably that is a thing that will at some point happen.
Well, we live in postmodern times.
Here's the thing. If Cal, who's not in Discharge anymore, and bear in mind, Discharge have made many other... They released a couple of other... just
they made two more of these fucking albums.
They also... Discharge also, at some point, shortly after this album, recorded a song called Sexplosion. You didn't know that, did you?
Crossplosion.
We're going to take a little break so I can play Sexplosion. I don't know where we're going to put it. I might stick it as an extra, but I just played Andrew, Sexplosion by Discharge, which you've never heard before, and I'm really glad I recorded the sounds that came out of you
fucking
as you heard
Shitsplosion.
So that's the end of Grump Up the Volume part number one. We're going to be back in about a month.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to the honorary mentions for bands who did something a little bit weird, because it will tie into the next thing. We've completely overlooked Warzone and Token Entry and all those bands because I just couldn't stand them.
A lot of them as well. It wasn't even hair metal. They just became kind of bloody.
Yeah, we tried to keep to just kind of bands who got a bit, you know, rock, whereas Warzone,
whose hair got a bit big.
Yeah, the New York bands, I don't know what they were doing. There were a couple of bands who kind of got a bit more rock and roll out of this period. The Necros, Tangled Up by the Necros, which is an album that I hated when I heard it first.
Yeah, it's kind of a decent trashy record.
Yeah, it's just kind of a... Yeah, it's got its moments. The song Tangled Up, I think, is a stinker. But it's not the worst.
No.
Similarly, I have made an argument that Danzig can be included here. Because Danzig, that first Danzig album, a lot of those songs were written when they were Samhain.
Mm.
And if you want to look at a band who basically went, let's be AC/DC, but a bit goth, that's the first Danzig record. And it's still a fucking blinder. I'm just going to go over and get a rubber glove and smack you in the face and demand you duel me.
Danzig is one of these weird people that I respect in a way, but I don't necessarily... I wouldn't own a Danzig album. I'd have all the Misfits, but I wouldn't own a Danzig record.
That's because...
But I guess a lot of people feel that way about Rollins. I'd have some Rollins stuff and other people go, Rollins is shit without Black Flag. I don't know, you know. But the other band, 7 Seconds.
I think if we were to discuss the other directions that punk went in that were a bit odd,
rather than sticking to the kind of more rock and roll based thing where we've taken the piss out of some mercies here, bands going metal with disastrous results. 7 Seconds essentially turning into U2.
Yeah, kind of REM U2. And I understand that because that's... Yeah. Those bands were making money, and I guess hardcore was kind of becoming a different thing at that point. Mm-hmm. It was more of a New York-y type tough thing.
And yeah, and no, it was kind of getting away from it. And then you had like bands like Empire from DC, which is people who were... Or was, no, they weren't from DC. They were Empire were English, who were ex-members of Generation X and kind of made the first emo record.
Mm.
Yeah, which was an influence on that 7 Seconds album and things like that. Die Kreuzen.
Yeah, they...
I Will Defend
just kind of became a metal-ish band.
They just became their own thing. They became... them and Voivod run parallel to each other in terms of just doing their own thing.
A lot of those...
Defending them.
Bands that I would have grown up on, like DRI and fucking kind of all started out as thrashy, hardcore bands who just became crossover bands. Yeah. Like Cryptic Slaughter. Kind of. Well, they were like a very fast hardcore band. It became a very fast metal band.
We've briefly mentioned CLC. I'd rather not mention them again because I have a complicated relationship with them. If there was ever,
I don't want to be mean about them.
I don't want to because they fair play some. I mean, they're still at it, and I really don't understand how their band works in terms of having two functioning lineups that both play different kinds of music, but under the same name. It's weird. It's like the continuity CLC. But, I mean, whatever. They put it away for a night. CLC, in fairness to them, when... I mean, they didn't really go hair metal. They got into that weird... Like, when Blind came out, that's...
I think they followed Black Flag into the kind of Black Sabbath thing. And Black Flag broke up before they got to that point where it was making full metal records.
The last band I want to mention, I've got Big Boys written down here in big letters, but I'm not going to... I've got nothing bad to say about the Big Boys, and they don't really apply here, but there was a reason it was, and instead of mentioning the Big Boys, who we've slagged in the Junkyard thing. Uniform Choices, Staring Into the Sun, which is kind of a spin-off of that 7 Seconds going U2 thing, but it sounds like a weird sort of pop-punk U2...
Yeah, it's not so good.
Diagnosti, hair metal mesh, but it's a train wreck of an album that I can't recommend.
Yeah, like, I could still listen to New Wind by 7 Seconds and, you know, get through it.
What's the 7 Seconds song where they start going, Jubilar, to the max?
That was on the big album. Was
it Sophos?
Oh, no. I don't know. Was that on the Epic album?
I haven't fucking clue, man.
The big album they put out? I think it was.
Oh, you played it to me. It's the one where they do...
The Kids Are United and all that stuff. Yeah. Which I quite liked that album at the time. I haven't heard it in 20 years, so don't...
But yeah, the Uniform Choice we mentioned in closing, because our next episode, we're going to tackle funk metal.
Oh, yes.
And oh my, this might rival TSOL and Discharge combined, some of this stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of great people from great bands
doing tremendously bad things.
Did not good stuff.
So we will see you in a month when we will pick up with Uniform Choice and discuss the unique stylings of Mindfunk.
Yes.
Featuring Uniform Choice's Patty Bar. So where we flagged Dave Smalley this month, next month's Whipping Boy will probably be Mike Muir and
the man who brought gang violence to hardcore.
Yeah. Anyway, so thank you for listening. If you're still awake, fair play to you. This has been Grump Up the Volume. That's what it's called, right?
Yep.
And just remember, it's funny because it's shit. Thank you and good night.
Ta ta.
Andrew Bush is now listening to this explosion by Discharge.
It's
said.
It sounds like
my cat.
It sounds like when Beavis is Beavis and Butthead are singing fucking Morbid Angel songs.
Now don't be me.
Listen to this.
Oh, we have to save this for the Funk Metal episode.
Fuck yeah, duck.